You're listening to episode 36 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, the Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on the Gearheart, Nicholas's chain was broken, but his promises of violence rang true in Cog's heart. Darren tried in vain to explain himself to his old lover, but found it wasn't enough. And with the battle approaching, Jonathan made his play for his old body. Will it work? Find out on the Gearheart. GNV Francesca, vanguard of the Grand Navy of Caldavia, sat patiently in the waters just off the coast of Keldenorn. The faint hues of the rising sun to come glanced off the clouds, silhouetting the ship against the night sky. It waited alongside 12 other Republic-class warships, silent in the sea. Cosimo headed for the bridge of the Francesca, and as he stepped inside, he felt the grim nature of his news grip his heart. Admiral Filippeppi turned to meet him.
"All of our scouting teams have reported back, sir. Activity has been sighted in the old town, but all life on the capital appears to have been exterminated, sir,"
said the commander, trying his best to keep his head. The admiral's scowl twitched, but the olive-skinned man otherwise retained his composure as he looked out over the remains of his beloved Keldenorn. He swallowed and blinked slowly, then took a deep breath.
"Was there any sign of life aside from that?"
Commander Cosimo removed his hat and straightened himself up as best he could.
"I'm sorry, sir. Our teams visited your house. They were able to recover the bodies. I'm truly sorry."
The muscles on the side of the admiral's face quivered as he clenched his jaw. Cosimo saw a similarity between the haunted face of the admiral and the men of the scouting teams. So many of the sailors wore the same expression, and even Cosimo felt certain he had lost some dear friends. Thankfully, though, most of the commander's family lived on a vineyard far to the north.
"The condition of the bodies?" asked Filippeppi.
"Same as the others, sir."
A tear managed to escape the admiral's stern eyes.
"Very good work, Commander. Quarantine the scouting teams and observe them for any sign of deterioration or disease. Notify me immediately of any changes in their condition."
"Yes, sir."
"We've heard back from the other envoys, Mr. Cosimo. The Northlanders have pledged a sizable disarmed rescue force to assist us in cleaning up the capital," said the admiral. "You'll be assisting in that effort once the period of observation ends."
"Period of observation, sir?"
"Yes, Mr. Cosimo. I've met with the rest of the captains and they feel the threat is not over. A fishing vessel reported strange lights over the city before the event happened. I'm not sending in any more troops until we are sure the threat has passed."
"And if it hasn't, sir?"
"Then we're going to be shelling anything we can pinpoint, Commander. Now pack your things and report to the Bonifacia at 1900 hours.
Nicholas smiled as Astrid fastened the final buckles of his armor. The smooth, malleable suit glistened blue like the skin of a fish, but resisted sudden impacts as surely as steel. His shadows no longer caressed his milk-white skin, and for what felt like the first time, Astrid saw the strands of his crimson hair. He looked so much like his sister, though the mechanic knew both bodies had been carefully manufactured. Nicholas no longer had the luxury of using his magic to fly or cloak his form. Without the chain, he could no longer feed upon Astrid's magic and her emotions, and she regretted that. The assistant wanted her master to be strong for the trials ahead. She craved the moment of his victory, when the planet would be remade into the perfect visions he had shared with her. How cruel that she would never see it. She activated the power on the armor and it hummed to life, the form-fitting aqua scales rippling with light under the ornate brass bands. Cog's blade would not pierce the suit. Nicholas thanked her with a smile and parted ways with her. Astrid knew it was probably the last time she would see him. A kiss would be unnecessary. He loved her. She murmured a whisper of thanks under her breath and made her way to the armory. Inside, she found her servants at the ready, their lenses staring patiently at her, awaiting her commands. Their long brass arms clicked eagerly as she strode past, inspecting each one. They anticipated her intent and bore their vital systems to her through their gleaming, golden exoskeletons. The servitors retreated to their places along the walls once the inspection was complete. Astrid remembered a time when she would be loath to send such elegant machines into battle for fear they might be damaged. With no fear left, she reveled in the idea that the servitors would finally reach their ultimate purpose. They were created for killing, and it was only in killing that they could truly fulfill their potential as tools. Astrid imagined them attacking Cog's force, and her heart raced at the thought of the coming dance of blades. Long legs for running, long arms for striking, precision optics that hid dispassionate logic centers capable of exterminating without feeling or hesitation. Hidden firearms, explosive potential. Their beauty caused Astrid to shudder with delight. The servitors would kill them all. All of them, including Maeve. The mechanic's heart throbbed and she fell to her knees. Her breathing grew ragged and cold sweat beaded across her skin. Maeve, beautiful Maeve, must die. And even if Astrid did not kill the Enchantress, Nicholas would, either by design or when he set off the convergence generator. Maeve must die. Her blonde hair must wither. Her eyes must be vacant. Astrid looked at her shaking hands, hidden beneath a layer of thick, rough leather gloves. Her face felt strange, and she rubbed her eyes. When she brought the gloves away, a dark brown patch stained them. Was she crying? Could she be crying? Impossible. Nicholas had taken her fear away, and what was sadness, save for the fear of losses to come or losses past? Astrid knew she could not brook cowardice. She walked to the workbench and seized the control spike for the servitors, looking it up and down. Rivulets of winding brass and copper ran along the surface of the quartz blade, culminating in a sharpened tip, much like a pencil. A box attached to the spike near the tip, and it bore a single button on its top. She admired her wicked design, running her fingers over its length. Simply instructing the servitors verbally or through programming would not do. She needed to be able to control all aspects of the forthcoming fight at a moment's notice. She needed more eyes and ears. She needed to be faster than she could be. Astrid pressed the spike to her forehead and clicked the button. Nothing happened at first. Then four gleaming hooks burrowed into the bony ridge of her forehead in an excruciating burst of pain. Though Astrid could not see it, the quartz emitted a soft purple glow as it began to spin. She screamed, but it could scarcely be heard over the whining screech of the spike as it drilled into her head. Brilliant, fractured colors, shapes, and sounds blasted her brain as the thing sunk into her gray matter, extending tendrils into the farthest reaches of her nervous system. The mechanic spoke in gibbering shouts for but a mere moment, then fell silent in a clatter of tools and beakers as she slammed into the ground. The box chimed pleasantly and popped off her forehead, leaving behind only a glowing, purple crystal embedded into her face. An angry red bruise surrounded it within seconds, but Astrid lay still, her shallow breathing the only testament to her life. The servitors watched, their glass eyes cold upon her body, lacking any curiosity or compassion. Then they suddenly snapped to attention. Astrid rose and looked them over. She could feel their movements, see their sight, and hear what they heard. Their ticking metal hearts beat in tune with her own as she held out her hands to them. Her children came to her, kneeling in supplication and stroking her arms as they brushed their brass faces upon her armor. Astrid smiled, for she was finally one with her children. Her brain would die soon, in a day or two. Eventually a blood clot or an infection would kill her, probably sooner than later. No one could survive the control spike for long, but for the moment, Astrid possessed all of her faculties. She did not need to live much longer, just through the morning. The pain in her head faded slightly as the device resonated with soothing magics. Now the servitors understood her will. Now the servitors could kill them all.
"Do you think they're coming?" asked Krost as they hid in the catacombs near the statue of Maria Giovaldi.
The roots of the strange jungle had absolutely mangled the catacombs underneath Keldenorn, reclaiming much of the underground for nature. The ancient gunmen had always liked coming to the capital because of the ease of travel through the underground passages, but they were nearly impassable now. Without its wonderful crypts and haunted tunnels, Krust just couldn't enjoy himself. He reflected on this as they lay in wait, watching from one of the few remaining non-flooded entrances.
"Of course they're coming, you old badger,"
hissed Wallaby.
"Now shut it. You're going to get us found."
She looked like a drowned rat with a pretty face, but somehow the old spider managed to retain some of its elitist dignity. "Not if something has happened to them," breathed Buskerton, hugging the ceiling with his clawed hands. "Perhaps there's something you're not telling us, good Krust. Where were you last night?" Krust looked from Wallaby to Buskerton then back, weighing his options. He frowned in thought, his lips thinning across his face and his brows sank. The gunman sighed and looked away as he tried to formulate his next sentence.
"Oh, come off it," said Buskerton. "You may as well tell us, since you're obviously working on a lie."
The old man gave Buskerton a stoic look.
"It's true."
Wallaby and his wolfish companion waited patiently for the rest of the man's reply. Eventually, the possessed woman grimaced.
"Well, out with it."
"I went and killed Maeve Manners."
"Oh, well, that was perfectly stupid of you. Tarnation, Krust. Just what are you playing at?"
asked Wallaby.
"Exactly my thoughts, Wallaby," said Buskerton. "What were you thinking, Krust? How are we supposed to fight alongside people whose friend we just murdered?" "Don't worry," said Krust.
"Don't worry," he says. "Don't worry? I'll worry all I bloody well please, you wrinkled lump of stone,"
exclaimed Wallaby. Buskerton placed a hand on her shoulder.
Indoor voices, my friend. Let us not be discovered because of Crust's blunder.
Indeed.
Wallaby grumbled.
Nah, you're still worried. You shouldn't be, said the gunman. I took care of things right nice-like.
Did you? How comforting,
said the woman.
And how, pray tell, did you kill Manners right nice-like?
Crust pulled off his hat for a moment to scratch his hair. Dirt filled his stringy white locks, and insects burrowed into his scalp at the first sign of light. After he'd vigorously shaken his mane, he replaced the wide-brimmed top and scratched his chin.
I done it up to look like Nicholas did it.
The other two exchanged incredulous glances.
Put her heart in the fox's cage, just like we heard Nicholas's father did. Then I ran, before any of them got wise to me presence. What? They ain't gonna suspect anything.
The beast man and the woman still disapproved. Crust sighed.
She didn't die. She just died for a bit is all. By now she's probably right as rain.
Wallaby scowled darkly.
I hope you're right, dear chap, because if you've gone and... Ah, they've arrived.
Cog, Darren, Augustus, and Maeve hadn't quite made it to the statue when Wallaby burst forth from the underground tunnels nearby and swaggered up to meet them.
Greetings, fair travelers!
Cried the small, gun-toting woman. Crust emerged with Brass Annie, and Buskerton with his vicious claws. Cog noticed the staples in Crust's neck, and wondered if his hand was better. Cog's party held their own armaments, Cog with her sword, Augustus with some sort of revolver, and Maeve and Darren with semi-automatic pistols. Augustus had only one of his frost spheres remaining, and he sorely regretted his mistakes with the first one. However, several other weapons jutted out from slings on his back. Maeve's eyes darted nervously about, and she looked as though she'd never held a pistol for combat before. Darren's gun remained securely holstered on his belt, ready for action should he need it.
Hail to you as well, Wallaby,
said Cog.
I see you're all here. All accounted for, yes? No, incidents?
Urged the girl.
We were quite harried by Nicholas and his assistant. They attacked Maeve to draw me out onto the roof. Sorry to hear that,
said Wallaby, her smile barely contained.
We need to take care of him this morning, Wallaby. Are your men ready to fight? Always, my dear. Very good,
said Cog.
Augustus, you and Maeve will remain at the back of the group for support. If Nicholas starts his weapon, it is likely you will have to be the one to stop it.
Darren stepped forward. Given what you said, the weapon is a very amplified version of my powers. Draw off the life force from some and supply it to others. Anything that can resurrect beings outside of time is beyond my ken, but I understand how it works on a basic level. Augustus, if you have to deactivate it, you'll want me with you.
Do you think Slade will show? Asked Augustus. I don't like the butcher, but we could use him right now.
Cog's eyes grew distant.
Who knows? I doubt it. If he wants a world to dominate, though, he'll be there.
Antonello Manor's entrance yawned before them. A passage into a darkened ruin, thick with beams of passing sunlight. Its black spires stretched into the hazy morning sky above, raking against the dark clouds that rolled by like passing airships. The rainy weather abated, and now a chill wind passed over the sunrise city, slowly freezing it. Cog surveyed her ancestral manse, noting how it had changed so much. The place had grown, pushing its tentacles into the nearby city, and it would have been hard to recognize, save for the Antonello family crest. The black stone fox and eagle
twisted in statuary over the eaves of the front entrance, an eternal combat of precision and cunning. She remembered that crest so well. Her father had it etched onto her skeleton. The others gathered some distance behind her. If the entrance held a trap, Cog had the best chance of dodging, or at least surviving. Crust occupied a bell tower in the nearby city, ready to offer fire support should the situation arrive. Augustus remained behind cover as Cog approached the entrance, Maeve by his side. Wallaby hid somewhere, probably planning an ambush. Buskerton stood right next to Cog, insisting there was no danger for him, and Darren followed a few paces behind. The blistering, cold winds did nothing to chill Crust's already corpse-cold skin. The rifleman watched and waited, his unblinking eyes affixed to the red-haired warrior. Their mission had been to kill the Seeress, then to kill Maeve Manners or bring out Auden Slade. Why? What was so important about Maeve Manners? Why did Nicholas want Auden Slade to come forth? Crust felt certain that some part of the answer lay in the distant past, but he had sorely ignored history as a pursuit. When they'd severed his head down in the tunnels, Crust could see that Auden Slade and Cog were not friends. Maeve Manners had to die because she knew about Nicholas, but why bring out the ancient swordsman? Nicholas either wanted to remove Jonathan as Cog's ally, or free an enemy of hers. Or maybe there was something special about Slade's emergence. So, who was the special one? Cog, Jonathan, or Auden Slade? The gunman's brain began to ache, and he ceased thinking on the matter. He would protect Jonathan and Cog. Killing Nicholas was the way. Maybe if he saw Slade, Crust could go get him and keep him away from the fighting or something. The grizzled assassin felt unsure of how to handle the whole situation, so he simply trained his gun on Cog's position. He was used to killing people, not helping them. He propped his foot up against the ledge and got comfortable. His eagle eyes would seek out anyone who came within 1,000 yards of his associates. Brass Annie ran up the length of his body, meeting with his shoulder in a comforting union. Nothing would appear that Crust couldn't handle. A mechanical clink sounded behind him, startling the gunman for the first time since he could remember. Positioned as he was, he could not turn to see it before he felt several knives dig into his back. Excruciating pain blasted through him as brass fingers dug into his flesh, reaching deeper into his ribcage. His lungs flooded with old, syrupy blood, and Crust could not call out, save for a gurgle. The fingers hooked around his bones, and when the pain reached a crescendo, he heard several pops, and everything grew warm and comfortable. His deaths usually ended that way. When the strange automaton flung Crust from the bell tower, he caught sight of his legs fluttering in the nearby breeze. The killer felt certain it was the first time he'd been ripped in half. A privilege, to be sure. Cog heard it right before she saw it. The instant she passed into the doorway, the air hummed to life with the crackle of magic and whooshed away from them. Buskerton, caught halfway over the eave, slammed face first into the ground, his head cleanly splitting open and spilling his brains onto the stones. A force like an axe blow hammered at his neck until it was little more than paste. The space of the doorway began to glow with a bursting, swirling cyan light. Cog struck at it with her sword, but the blade arced and crackled against the thing, sending violent, shooting pains up her arm. She could feel the field give, but not enough to penetrate. To attempt any more was to risk damage. The trap was sprung. A field of magic separated Cog from all of the rest of her compatriots, locking them outside in the streets. The whistle of metal provided the only warning of an inbound attack the red-haired fighter received. Without time to parry, she ducked away, hoping the blow would strike poorly
or not at all. Cog lunged into a roll, placing much-needed distance between her and her new enemy. When she came up from her tumble, she spun to see the new threat. Her brother stood before her in all his glory, form-fitting armor shining in the murky light like a regal tang. Shadows no longer clung to his form, and his own scorching red hair flitted in the breezy aftermath of the barrier spell. Cog could not see the remainder of his chain, but guessed that it hung limply at his back. What replaced it, however, terrified her. Nicholas clutched their father's staff, the gleaming eagle's head shrieking before her.
"Do you like it, sister?"
asked Nicholas.
"I took it from the vault here after I killed everyone."
Cog struck instantly in the face of Nicholas's gloating. She would shatter that staff before he could speak again. The mechanical woman had no idea where her brother had found the awful thing, and she didn't care. The only priority now was to silence him. The staff must not be used. Cog traversed the distance between the two siblings with a single bound. Her foot landed on sure ground, and she lunged at him with her blade, stabbing out at his chest. Nicholas darted out of the way with the grace of a dancer, sinking low. As she lashed out, she used the spin of her body to redirect her blade into an earth-shattering slash. Nicholas writhed about her like an eel, his practiced dodges bending his lithe body away from her blows. Before Cog could corner him, he leapt into the air, sailing over her. Nicholas could not redirect his body while airborne, and Cog seized the advantage. The warrior threw her blade as hard as she could in a practiced motion, and it connected perfectly with the hangman's gut. The sheer force of her strike sent him bouncing back against the ceiling before he slammed into the floor and rolled away. Her sword, however, did not sink into his body, and it clattered to the ground some feet from her.
"Very good,"
laughed the hangman as he attempted to climb to his feet. She wasted no time in pulling the sword back to her hand. Tiny stones engaged inside Cog's arm, tracing miniature glyphs and sheathing the tool in a hail of arcing flames. The first strike didn't pierce, so she would increase the power until Nicholas was utterly obliterated beneath her blade. Her fingers tightened about the fiery metal, and she clenched her teeth, preparing to tear him in half. Cog dashed forward, the sword becoming a blur of hazy orange as its flames trailed in the air like a flag. The hangman had not quite reached his feet before she closed to striking distance. She lashed out in a wide, bright arc, hopeful as he seemed unprepared to dodge. Nicholas brought up a single arm in his defense. Purple waves of shimmering energy rippled across the scaly surface of his armored arms, echoing through the brass trim of the armor. Fire roared back at Cog, dispersing cleanly into the air as the shield deflected her blade's force and magic. The suit reflected her strike hard enough to break her grip and send the blade whistling away into the stones beyond. Nicholas's leading foot slid back a half step, and with a flourish he brought the head of the eagle staff upward into her gut. The pure strength of the hit, coupled with the staff's own special magic, blasted Cog into the ceiling. She felt control of her body disrupted as rock dust showered from the fresco. Before she hit the ground, Nicholas swatted her like a fly, sending her flying deeper into the castle. Cog remembered the pain of Jacopo's staff, and her artificial muscles twitched uncontrollably under her skin. She remembered the blazing castle of Audenslade, the place where her father had used that very implement to bury her. She tried to summon the will to resist it again, to fight and rend her brother limb from limb. How could she stop Nicholas when he was so powerful? Perhaps her brother did not understand what he held. Cog sprung to her feet, ready to try again, her sword appearing in her hand.
"Kneel,"
came her brother's voice, and the nausea crashed over her with titanic force. Strength fled Cog's body, and she sunk to her knees, barely able to comprehend the consuming agony. Intense feelings flooded every part of her, washing into places she never knew could feel that sort of suffering. Her vision spun, and her lips grew weak. She could not even muster the strength to cry out, because her artificial lungs refused to breathe. Cog's eyes threatened to roll back in her head, but she forced her hands under her, desperately trying to remain upright. Nicholas's arcane grip felt equal to the potency of Jacopo's magic on the night her father left her slumbering for 1,000 years. No, her brother's grip was even stronger. The hangman chuckled, admiring the sparkling eagle's head.
I have wanted this for years, ever since father used it to send me away. I understand it was quite effective against you as well. Tell me how effective it was.
Cog's lungs suddenly burned as though someone flooded them with acid. She coughed and choked, unable to understand why she suddenly gasped for air when she never needed to breathe before. She screamed out and found her lips forming the words,
"Stop! Please stop! It hurts!"
A strange, sympathetic look passed through Nicholas's eyes, and he relaxed his grip on the staff. He seemed momentarily taken aback with his own actions, and the pain that showered Cog's bones suddenly vanished, replaced with euphoric nothingness. Nicholas grit his teeth, eyes askance.
It was not my intention to torture.
Cog flung her blade at his head, forcing him to bat it away with his forearm. She was upon him in a clock's tick, her empty hands clawing for the staff or any other purchase she could find upon her brother's body. He jerked away, but her hands found the shaft of the implement, and he spun backward, breaking her hold on the object. Cog threw a piercing kick into Nicholas's face and connected hard, stunning her brother before he could react. Not missing a beat, she leapt up onto her hands and seized the hangman about the waist with her legs. Cog silently praised Augustus's beautiful gyro modifications as she slammed Nicholas face first into the hard stone floor. She kept her brother in a lock and wrapped her arms around his head, preparing to use her massive strength to wrench it free of his neck. The eagle head immediately appeared in the periphery of her vision, eager to defend its master as Nicholas backhanded her with the staff. The jolt delivered to her this time when the staff connected with her face was far superior to the first. Her body sizzled and quivered as she flew through the air, and when she landed, she could no longer stand. Cog attempted to climb to her hands and knees with her pitiful remaining strength as the energy of the staff resonated over her bones.
Nicholas,
she groaned.
You will die here, alone with your friend.
Enough!
Shouted Nicholas, slamming the point of the staff down, and Cog's body fell limp beneath her. She watched from her vantage point on the ground as his glistening boots drew ever closer, and she longed to stop him under her veil of pain.
Why is it that you persist in saving the humans, Elena? What possible purpose could you have that would not be better served by a heart of gears and steam? How have you strayed so far from consequence that you will not see reason? Turn over.
Cog's arm convulsed, shoving her upright and placing her eyes even with her brother's knees. The hangman sneered and kicked Cog hard across her face, rolling her onto her back.
Do you know why you can't resist my hold over the staff, dear sister?
He knelt down and straddled her chest, pinning the woman's arms. His smooth hands searched out the fine leather choker, and he wrapped his delicate fingers around the stone. His eyes met hers, and he smiled.
It's because I am like you. I understand everything about you except for your heart. And that is why I can make you do anything I want.
Not anything.
Cog breathed with a weak smile. Nicholas frowned and placed the beak of the eagle against her forehead. He closed his eyes and spoke the words,
"Understand me."
Then he gingerly removed the staff and looked into her blossoming eyes.
I already understand you well enough, you damnable fool.
Her brother smirked and gingerly lifted the amulet from her neck. Darkness smothered her.
Activity, sir, from the old capital!
Shouted the first mate to Admiral Filippeppi as the senior officer entered the bridge.
Report!
Commanded the admiral.
Strange lights, sir. I think you'd better have a look,
said the sailor, gesturing toward the ship's binoculars. A swirling dome of blue energy, encapsulating portions of the old city, greeted the commanding officer's eyes. It pulsed and rippled madly, like a freshly poured bucket of water, and the admiral's heart thundered in his chest. Their witnesses had reported strange lights before the destruction of the capital. Was it happening again? Filippeppi turned away from the binoculars and locked eyes with his first mate.
Shell it. Leave nothing standing.
As the ship snapped to battle stations, Filippeppi put the binoculars to his eyes. He would watch it burn this time. Ambush seemed a poor word for such a perfectly orchestrated attack. Tactically, Augustus felt Masterpiece to be a more appropriate choice. A shining automaton descended upon them from a nearby building the moment the shield slammed down over Antonello Manor. The mechanic scarcely had time to place a shot into the hulking brass beast as its claws lunged out at Maeve. A white ray of energy spewed from the front of his handgun into the thing's chest, and the mechanical creature flew backward into a concrete wall. Augustus kept the weapon leveled at the smoking hole into which the attacker had disappeared. The revolver had punched it with enough force to power through a steel ship's hull. When the creature loped out of the debris with barely a dent, Augustus cursed himself for being surprised. He fired again, but the shot went wide as the contraption executed a dexterous rolling dodge. Darren emptied his clip at the machine, but to no effect. The bullets simply ricocheted off its metal hide. It had closed the gap with them to a mere stone's throw before Augustus shoved Maeve aside and blasted the thing in the face with his revolver. The creature staggered a few paces away, bent over backward, but then dropped to a crab walk and scrambled at Augustus with alarming speed. Within heartbeats, the beast was upon the mechanic, pinning him to the ground, arm poised to strike. Wallaby dashed forward, spraying bullets at the thing, and one shot knocked the creature's claw off course, causing it to rake its talons across the ground, eventually wedging them into the earth. Her ammunition spent, Wallaby attempted to shove the monstrosity off the mechanic, but the beast freed its arm and lashed out at her. A flash of metal sent Wallaby's pretty new head spinning wildly onto the ground. Her stunned face came to a stop next to Augustus, eyes fluttering. The creature paused for the slightest moment, deciding whether or not to smash its victim's skull or just leave it at decapitation. Augustus, however, did not hesitate. The mechanic slammed his palm against the breastplate of his armored foe, feeling its motor system with his magic and coaxing it to jam. The creature shuddered violently, and several screws turned loose inside its brass belly. Without the intervention of its master, the metal terror could not resist Augustus's compulsion and fell limply upon him, nearly crushing the poor man under its weight. And where was its master? Augustus swam through the creature's systems, looking for the intelligence of a machine to guide it. The mechanic's magic seeped into the control box, suffusing the machine with his consciousness. Surely if it had orders, the snowy-haired mechanic could discover them. Instead of orders, he found a single controlling node beyond the physical body of the beast, feeding information and directives to a hive of machines. Augustus suppressed his growing horror and pushed harder. Images flooded his mind as he saw with the cold eyes of five machines. And then, unique in their imperfection, he saw through human eyes. Astrid. She'd found a way to link her mind with theirs. But how? Augustus clambered out from under the beast, maintaining physical contact with its carapace as Darren helped him to his feet. The mechanic looked up to where he believed Astrid stood, based upon her eyesight. He saw her there, standing at the roof's edge with a callous stare etched upon her face. Bulky armor, speckled with a plethora of protective apparatuses, covered her body from neck to toe, except for her head, which bore a remarkably clear helmet. Her visor shined inside with the lights of various spells, and Augustus had little doubt she masterminded the assaulting force. She held a rifle of some sort in her hand, but Augustus didn't wait to see what it would do. With sheer will and his mastery of magic, the mechanic reached up through the creature's control unit and into Astrid, finding the device inside her brain that enabled her to hold the creature's minds in hers. A control spike pierced her gray matter, digging deep into her neurological structures and binding their wills to hers. The bold complexity of the creation surprised Augustus, but it didn't prevent him from learning its other functions. The machine had several prehensile anchors it used to push down into her head and attach to nerve endings, and with a little work, they could be wiggled. All it would take was the slightest movement of the control spike, and Augustus could stop her heart. The unconscious echo of the mechanic's plan twitched the device a hair's breadth, sending Astrid to her knees in the distance. Her cleverness would be her undoing. Augustus would tear her mind to pieces from the inside. Astrid's scream sang from the roof as she clutched her head, staggering back. She fought back, their egos sparring for control of the device. She threw tiny arcane switches as fast as she could, rapidly working to neutralize him, but Augustus had the upper hand. He was not in horrible, mind-bending pain. He would overcome her soon, and her little toys would become nothing but piles of expensive garbage. The snow-capped mechanic felt Darren's tug upon his arm, but he would not show mercy. He would destroy her for helping the hangman. He would show her the gruesome death she deserved for all of the trouble she and Nicholas had caused in Cercival. One more switch, and the spike would core her head like an apple. But then Darren jerked Augustus so hard he lost contact with the brass hulk.
"Darren, what is your—"
he seethed, but Augustus could barely hear his partner shout,
"Get down!"
over the whistling of impending death. Shells fell from the skies like meteors, exploding with the force of the gods clapping against the shields of nearby Antonello Manor. Maeve, Darren, and Augustus hit the deck as flames and shockwaves reflected across the old town buildings, instantly crumbling several of them to dust. Augustus and the others had no idea of what had become of Astrid and her minions. They did not care to look, as though shielding their eyes from the blasts would render them impervious to the heat and shrapnel. Their ears sang, and blood dripped out of the openings as Augustus's eyes met Maeve's. Dirt showered around them like pepper, and the thumps of artillery fire became distant thunder. Her face screamed with fear and apology. The mechanic knew what she was thinking. She was supposed to be chosen. They were supposed to be keeping her alive for this day. What was her role, and had she already failed? Would they all die in this place? His rough hand sought hers out in the maelstrom and gripped it tight. It would not be okay, but they were together. As Augustus stared deep into Maeve's blue eyes, he saw the rapid approach of Astrid's metal soldiers through the smoky light, the hot shrapnel glancing off their shining bodies. Augustus dared not look back to see what had become of Darren. He held Maeve's warm, soft hands in his, because this was the end. The machines stopped over Maeve, who would not look up at them, and Augustus prayed for a well-placed shell to avenge them. Her hand grew white in its grip on her, but her face did not waver. She stared at Augustus, and he would admire the bravery in her eyes until the final moment. dragged Cog's body back into the darkness with him. The hangman would have an audience, even if the only eyes that watched him were empty. His left hand held Cog's ankle as though her solid body weighed as much as a small child. His right hand clasped the red stone from Cog's neck. The Gearheart felt heavier than Nicholas imagined it would. The task of retrieving it seemed too simple, really. For years, he'd sought a device that contained enough power to pierce the veil of time, and it belonged to his father all along. Some would say that the Gearheart was Elena's, that it was her soul, but Nicholas didn't think so. Elena had failed to do anything with her life, and so it should be her fate to be consumed by men far greater than her. Jacopo, their father, should have realized that she would only ever amount to a power source. After all, she was only a woman. As he rounded the corner into the final hallway before the convergence generator, Nicholas thought of Astrid. Poor, sentimental Astrid. How did she differ from the hangman's fool sister? Nicholas had enjoyed turning her against the Seekers, but she was a devotee, an acolyte, and nothing more. Why couldn't her brain grasp his greatness? She would support him, but in the end, Astrid would be transformed into the same used-up husk as everyone else. Nicholas's soft footfalls disappeared amid the muffled, melodic thumps of the artillery against the arcane shield. Such a pleasant sound. The greatest weapons of humankind, reduced to bells in the final movement of their symphony. He wished for an instrument to play, but nothing so base as a human creation. He wanted to hear the music of the successors. Nicholas paused by the staircase in the derelict ballroom to prop Cog's body up where she could watch. Her head lolled to one side, but he placed her against the railing so she would not fall. Running his white fingertips over her hair, he turned back toward his destination, thoughts of the music of the animals still running through his mind. In all of the years he spent watching those brilliant creatures, the hangman never once saw them play an instrument. They very clearly showed intelligent communication, but never did they attempt to create a melody. Nicholas supposed he would miss music if he had a place in that world. Luckily for him, his essence, like everyone else's, would go to a greater cause than mere survival. Did they have music of which the hangman was unaware? He thought briefly on the subject before traversing the space to the generator and throwing open its housing. The gold-pronged receptor eagerly awaited Cog's most precious possession, hanging open like the talons of an eagle. Nicholas did not even bother to wrench the leather choker from the Gearheart before gingerly placing the pendant into the system. He disconnected the test capacitor, discharging the life energy of Astrid's many victims into the atmosphere, and threw the brass lever to change the power supply. The convergence generator hummed to life, eager to please its master. Nicholas's practiced hands worked the controls, and he wasted no time in resetting the scope of the system to cover the entire planet. He did not need to alter anything else from their original test firing on the city of Keldinorn. Everything was set, and the device began to charge, emitting a deadly, slowly expanding field of shimmering lights. The first wave would be enough to drain most mortals of their life force, and the second pulse would kill anything on the planet, no matter its powers or abilities. He had to make certain even the most potent magi would be killed by the device. Nicholas armed the generator, then, with great effort, sat down upon the steps of the ballroom, next to the corpse of his estranged sister. The tiny lights of the arcane storm flitted about his skin like fireflies, and each touch pulled more of his strength away from him. His body grew warm, and his mind became fuzz. And finally, after so many years of agony, Nicholas rested.
licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Dr. Amerian's Deluxe Sea Serpent Repellent for the savvy submariner. Tired of being eaten by sea serpents? If you're like so many devoured folks, you'll need a can of Dr. Amerian's Deluxe Sea Serpent Repellent. It's the mace that's ace against sea serpents. And by Gatsby's Multicolored Pens, modern pens for modern men. A Gatsby's man is a man who understands unity and purpose. A Gatsby's man can write in any color he wants, day or night, with supreme boldness. Gatsby's multicolored marbles carry ingenious ink welts for red, green, blue, and for some reason, yellow. To change cartridges, simply click the colored button at the top. Gatsby's multicolored pens. Are you a Gatsby's man?